Accession number 31415.
Reel 8. So what happened when he got this kit? He got the 44 kit.
Well, he told us to... and there was two kit bags. He said, right, he told us what to put in the small kit bag. He said, oh, but before that, we had to put our names and numbers on these kit bags, stencil it. So we had to... We had the stencil kit there. We had to stencil our number, rank and name on the thing. And he told us some numbers, some letters and numbers to stamp on the two kit bags, and that was it. He said there was this like a code number, I can't remember, and numbers. So then he said to me, now you'll pack your ordinary kit bag, what you've always had. You'll pack that, he said, with the normal kit. He said, and one pair of boots. He said you'll keep one pair of boots with you. Leave your plimsolls out, your gym shoes, he said, and he told me what we was packing in the small kit bag, which turned out to be a C kit bag. So we knew he was going abroad somewhere. So then, after we'd packed all our kit and he got us sorted, he said to us, right now, he said, you hand all this stuff back in the stores, you're going home today on 14 days embarkation leave. So he said, if you want to change into civvies, you can do, because you're still here in the UK, because at them days, we was allowed to wear civvies. You can change into your civvies, which we did. Went home in civvies. And then I went over 14 days.
What do you remember of the embarkation leave?
Oh, a great time. And of course, my dad said to me, where are you going? So I said, well, they've not told us, really. So he said to me, well, I had some gear with me in my suitcase. I had my battle dress with me, packed in, because I changed and because I packed everything else away. So I had my battle dress, what I got to change into, and my shirt there. So that was in the suitcase, and the belt, and putties, green putties it was, ankle putties, and my green belt. So when I was at home and I got these out, my old man said to me, that's a bloody funny belt, he said. I said, this is what I'm being issued with. He said, you're going to the Far East somewhere. He said, I bet you're a bugger, you're going to Korea, he said. That's what he said to me. So I said, oh, yeah.
Well, you'd volunteered for that. It can't have been that much of a surprise to you.
No, it was to him.
You hadn't told him?
No. So he said, when he said that's up to you, he said, so my mum said to him, you volunteered to go to India, so why didn't it shouldn't he? So that was it. But she didn't like it. So anyway, what happened was, I had my 14 days leave. Done the usual at home, you know, went out in different places, one thing and another, and went out and had a few drinks and one thing and another, and then I went reported back. Now, we was back during the day. I got back about midday.
Still didn't have a unit then? You were just reported to the depot?
Yeah, none of us had a unit to go back to. So we just reported to the depot, and then... he said to me automatically, as we went to the guard room to report in and our passes back in, regimental police, said, right, he said, you've got to report to, go to the Q stores, get your bed in, you're here tonight and tomorrow, but you're leaving the following day, you're going to Liverpool. So, he said, yeah, so he said, you're here tonight and tomorrow night, but you're leaving the following morning. You're getting the train, you're all catching the train, you're going to Liverpool, to the docks at Liverpool. So we got all our kit out. This was the whole idea, that we got all our kit out. We had to check all our kit, that's why it was another day. We checked all the kit and they give us extra, they give us instead of a ground sheet, because we had to hand that in, we got a poncho, which was a green poncho, a square shaped thing it was. And with a poncho, you could do anything with a poncho. You could make a tent out of a poncho with a piece of wood, a pole, any old bit of wood, put it in the middle, draw the drawstrings, and you'd have a little bivouac. What else did we get? Oh, and he said, also, you're drawing weapons. The day after tomorrow, first thing in the morning, he said, you'll be up at half past five, we got up. He said, you're not catching the train till gone 10 o'clock to what's name, and then you're making the journey. and you'll be drawing your arms on the following day. I think it was a Wednesday. I'm not sure.
I think and this would be July?
No, this was later on, because I was still at the depot.
I'll just put the tape record on. You stayed at the depot for how long then?
About 3-4 months.
That would still only make it to October. I thought you said
later than that. We was later than that. We didn't leave till 52. We didn't leave till 52.
So when had you got
after the king died, we left. I was at the depot when the king died.
So
that was February.
So when had you got to the depot?
We'd done about 6 months in the depot. Well, we used to be down and we was employed sweeping out every day.
Hang on then. So when did the embargation leave come? That came right at the end.
Well, they give us it at the beginning when we got there, because we were supposed to be going.
So when you see, this is where it goes a bit wrong, because next, you said you got back from embarkation day, but next day they sent you off.
Yeah, we were supposed to go on the 2 days after.
But you didn't.
We didn't go.
Nah, I think we've got the story now. It's my fault.
We didn't go.
So what happened? You got all this additional kitting out. You were going to go at the train to Liverpool. Then what happened?
And it just said it's been cancelled. They said it's been cancelled. Just stop being here till further notice.
So why was it cancelled?
Well, we don't know. They never told you. And old Pop said to me, there's something gone wrong here. He said, I think there's something gone wrong here. And which was right. So we were surprised how long we'd stayed there. Because we were going home. And all on top of that, I remember going home for weekends. I even had a 72-hour pass.
Now tell me, what duties were you doing at Bovington? Down
the old museum, down the tank museum at Bovington. We used to be marched down here every day, and we spent the day down there sweeping and cleaning the vehicles every day. That's the only jobs we ever did.
So the old First and Second World War tanks?
All of them, from all over the world. Montgomery's car, the car he had in the desert, had to be cleaned, because we had people were visiting, you see. Civilians were allowed to go in. You had to pay to go in. Civvies did. Military personnel didn't, but civvies did. They had to pay to go in that museum. And of course, everything was in there, going right back to when tanks first started in the First World War. Willie was outside.
And so
on a ramp.
And you were just cleaning these things then?
Yeah, we used to clean them every day and sweep the floors. We had bloody brooms 3 feet, 4 feet wide. And we used to go down the alleyways, sweep it, and it was purgatory. It was all right for the first month. But then he was doing the same thing day after day, day in, day out. We did no guards because the permanent staff did the guard duty.
Did you not have no other duties, or was it just cleaning the tank?
Just cleaning the museum. We done nothing else but clean the museum.
So how'd you feel?
And clean in the barracks. Some of us had to do the ablutions in the barracks for so many days. You know, we was doing like other blokes that were being held up. For going for Malaya. They were all held up and all. They were going to Malaya. And the canal zone. Because we were all going on the same boat, you see.
So,
and we don't know what the hell
this
happened.
This sounds like it was worse than when you were 68th training regiment.
It was. The only thing was, in the afternoon, after lunch, after we had our dinner, we didn't have to go back to the museum. Every day we didn't have to go back. So some of the lads used to go out. Some of the lads go and lay on their bed, or go down to the naffy, or down to the pub down the bottom of the road after dinner. But you had to be out by 2:30, because they shut in at 2:00 in those days. So that's what we did. In the afternoons, we had the afternoons to ourselves. And we just used to, drift about. Go out, or catch a bus if you had money, go down to Bournemouth. Go to the PRI and get a ticket to go on the train for a tanner to go to Bournemouth for the rest of the day. That's what we spent our time doing. Just messing about. You know what I mean?
And that was for 6 or 7 months?
Yeah. Because we was going originally to the 8th Hussars, apparently, called a pop. So but what got us was that all the blokes that were going on this boat didn't go on this bloody boat. And why we didn't go on another boat was baffling. You know what I mean? We could never get round it. And then eventually we was told we were going.
So what happened?
So we went, it was after the king died. It was February, the end of February when we went.
So what do you remember about being sent?
Well, we got to Liverpool by train.
We to went where?
Liverpool, to the docks. Berth, I forget the name, I think it was Berth 1. It's the one where the live bird is. On the, you see him plain as day. We got there, and I remember that. It's funny how you remember that. I know we sailed at 6 o'clock, because the clock, the Liver clock, at the, where the Liver bird is, struck 6 o'clock, and that's when we felt the ship move.
And what ship was it?
HMT Halliday, Empire Halliday.
Now, what was your mess deck like, or the other?
Well, thing? There was loads of us on it. I forget the name of the mess deck. We was on. I forget the name of the deck. What we was
well,
on.
What was it like? Yeah. What were conditions like?
Well, there was four. All packed. It was four bunks high. Rows upon rows of bunks, and I mean rows upon rows, four decks high. Four bunks high, and we used to. Certain blokes was allocated to do certain jobs, once we got underway. Of course, when you got on board, you had your all you had to have. Your other kit bag was taken off you, your big kit bag. And the first thing you did when you went on board was go to the armoury, queue up at the armoury, because not all blokes had arms, only us. And the guys going to Malaya had their arms, and we had to hand them in at the armoury, and then they took them off you and signed for them. And there was a number beside it, and they give you a disc to carry, you know, so that when you went to collect your arms, you gave them the disc. So anyway, we set sail. We took, and we was told by the over the tannoy to change from boots to plimsolls. And from now on, all the time you're on board this ship till you get off, you wear plimsolls. You do not wear boots. Or shoes. The only time you put your boots on was when you went on shore leave, you know, or if you had a pair of shoes with it, put a pair of shoes on. So, and then we was given duties to do on board ship. Some had some cushy numbers, had some good jobs, you know, but in the main it was keeping the place clean.
So what was yours?
Well, we did sweeping out the down below, making sure the ablutions. We did, it all took turns. You'd do it for so many days, and then they'd swap over. Because there was that many blokes on board, they had that much, and they didn't want them all having to do work all the time. So what they did, you got changed over. Then you went and done something upstairs. You went all over the place. You done, and then other days, you're just lazing about on the deck, especially when you got to the med.
Now, what about seasick? You know when you start?
I was never seasick.
Was anybody else?
Oh, yeah, all down the stairways. All of them through the alleyways and the border ship. And most of them were matlows that were going out to join the Far Eastern Fleet. They were all matlows. They were hanging over the side. Oh, and the place stunk. That's when it... As soon as we left, as soon as it started to rock, the boat, there was... Oh, God, it was murder. And most of them were matlows. That's what got you. They were, you know... I mean, they're going out on some of these ships and... When I found out what it was like, some of the seas, what they sailed in, eventually, you know. And we went round the edge of the bay.
What about the food? What was the food?
Oh, it was, used to see, it was a like a table, a long table. And I suppose three or four down that side, three or four down that side. And they always...
In your mess deck?
Yeah, the mess deck. And there was always a porthole where you sat. There was a porthole. But it was up high, you know, and there was the bulkhead of the ship, and there was these buckets, and then the two blokes who happened to be the end ones who sat on the end, they had to go and get it, didn't they? And they get them in these dishes, these things, bring them, and of course the plates was already on the table, and there was always a ridge on them tables, right the way round. That's in case you hit rough seas, which we did, and they had to serve up the meal, you see. The blokes of the two sat at the end, and they tried to change the tables, change round because they were no, because they said you can't do that. because you've got to, that's your number where you sit. And that's, you've got to keep that number. So you, of course, that was their job all the time, with serving the grub. The three meals, what we had, three major meals.
Is the food all right?
Yes, quite good. What I've always liked, and I've ever since I've ever tasted it, first time I ever tasted it was on board a ship, was ship's bread. Now, ship's bread's got no yeast in it. And it's beautiful bread. And it really, really is beautiful bread. And they don't carry yeast at all on board ships, because it goes off, doesn't it? It goes rotten. And it goes all mildewy. So everything's baked without yeast. Whatever they bake that needs yeast on shore, it's cooked without yeast. But I will say this. Those cooks on board them troop ships, well, on that holiday, the food was lovely. We did have it. That's why it come up. And the way it, and somebody said, I don't like this. Well, get it here then. You know, I don't like liver, and I don't like this, and I don't. Well, you know, you ate really well on board ship. You did. You ate really well.
Now, what was the route you took then? Tell us what you remember of the trip.
Well, first stop was Malta. We went into Malta, into Valletta Harbour. And of course, when you got in there, the ship had a job to turn round in there. But the reason was, it was still a naval base, wasn't it? And there was destroyers in there. The aircraft carrier was outside, because the aircraft carrier can't get in Valletta, nor can battleships. But corvettes and cruisers could. And when we got in there, it was a sight. When we got there, we got, come on, whoa, bloody hell. And we had shore leave there.
Did you go ashore?
Yeah.
What do you remember about that?
It was great. And I went down what they called, you must go down where the gut is. It was where all the nightclubs and that are, isn't it? Because the Navy and that. And the Navy headquarters was down there. And when we went past this, oh, there's a pub there, right opposite. We went down there, made our way down there to all these beer halls, because they're open all day, aren't they? You get that these countries are open all day. So we went and we was on these, in these beer halls. We was told by different matlows who were going back out, it was old matlows, old salts. They said, oh, when we get down to Dirty Dick's, you'll have a good time there. Well, when we got down to Dirty Dick's, right opposite on the other side of the road, the road, there was this office block, office building. And there was two matlows outside in boots and gaiters and a belt round here, a bayonet and a rifle, and they were on guard. And it was the Admiralty HQ, wasn't it? But right opposite was Dirty Dick's, the notorious boozer called the Dirty Dick's. And you can understand why there's more than that. Those arrested there than anywhere else. There was fights and all sorts. And
what was it like in the guts and place like that?
It was nice. The beer halls were quite nice. The beer halls. You didn't see much of Malta because it was a naval base and it wasn't built up like it is today. It was a naval base.
Would you drink much?
We all got drunk, didn't we? Everybody got drunk. And come back on board ship. And we got back on board ship and we sailed that night.
So where then?
And then we arrived at ports. We went to Gibraltar, but we never got off at Gibraltar. Never got off at Gib. We pulled in at Gib. We dropped some troops off at Gib. Dropped some matlows off at Malta. And then Gib, there was a matlows got off at Malta to join the Mediterranean fleet. And then we dropped a load of Air Force blokes and some artillery blokes and engineers off at Gibraltar, because there was an RAF strip at Gib, only a small amount, wasn't there, at Gib. And then there was mainly Royal Engineers and artillery, and the artillery look after the monkeys, don't they? The gunner.
So
he's a corp bombardier, isn't he, that looks after, still is.
So then Malta, which we've
then
done.
From Malta, and then we went to Portishead.
Did you get ashore there?
No. Nobody went ashore at Portishead. And then they built up the convoy. And we sailed through and there was all shouting to us, get your knees brown. And there was the wogs lifting up their galabeers and waving it about. Of course, there was racks and whaps. And we sailed through there. And there was all these bum boats when we got there. And I bought a watch. For, I think it was about 10 bob. I bought a watch. Well,
where at? Portishead.
And this had come out, and this bloke, and I bought this watch, and it was going, it was perfect time. Following morning, I looked at it, it was bloody stopped. And it never went anymore. And then one of these old blokes, word of sweat, said, you know, these beetles, what they got inside. He said, the bloody beetle's dead. He's running around. He's keeping, but it went, you know what I mean. And it kept going till the, and I wasn't the only one. You know what I mean? And the things that blokes were buying, like off these bumbos, fruit and all that kind of thing. And he was warned about buying fruit off of them because you could get bloody disease, dysentery, you know, because it was unwashed and all that business. But they were down there, hey, you want to buy dirty postcards? Hey, Johnny, hey. Anyway, we got through to Port Suez. Oh, and we had to stop at Port, at the Bitter Lakes. Because the convoy was coming the other way. You anchor off in Bitter Lakes while the convoy's coming up from Port Suez. Then they anchor up while the convoy's still coming through from Port Said. Then you continue on your journey. That played another part in my life later on. So then we went from there to Aden.
Did you go ashore there?
No. Nobody went ashore at Aden. Then we went Colombo, went ashore at Colombo, Ceylon, it was then. And we went ashore, and when you went ashore there, you don't moor up, the ships don't moor up in the docks. You moor out in like a stretch of water, and there's all sorts of ships, and you go ashore in landing craft. I always remember that. First time I'd ever been in my life on a landing craft. And you went on these, the ones that used to hit the beaches. And you went ashore at Colombo on landing craft. Now, that was not a bad day there. It was quite a good day.
Now, tell us about it, because this is all new to you. You're just a local lad from Essex, you know. And what did you think of it there?
Well, Colombo? It was strange, because you see all these bullocks in the street. And they're pulling all, everything's being pulled by bullock carts, you know. And and these other ones are wandering about the street. Just wandering, cows wandering about the streets, you know. And we was looking for a pub, for a beer hall, you know. And it was very, very strange. But at the same time, it was nice, because it was bloody hot when we got there. We changed into jungle greens. And we was in our jungle greens. We was walking about, walking everywhere, you know. Everything took you by surprise, you know, the different shaped buildings and things, everything was different. And the people were different, and the way they looked and dressed and spoke to you. And they're coming, still coming up to you with, you want to buy dirty postcards, lovely postcards. You like her? You see my daughter, my sister? You want my mother? That's yeah, that was in Colombo, that was. Well, anyway, we found this bar, and the strangest thing about that, I hadn't seen one of them. Went in this bar, and we ordered this beer. All you do is, in Colombo, they said, all you do is just say two beers, three beers, or whatever it is. So there was four of us together, so one of us ordered four beers. And when it came up, I'd never seen one of them bottles till last time I was a kid in the north. And they had these marbles in the top. And you had to push the marble down with your finger, didn't you? And every time you kept drinking, the marble kept coming back up the top. Anyway, we were, this beer was vile. So anyway, we said, we haven't got long ashore here because we've got to be on board by 6 o'clock. So we went to another bar. We went to all different bars, but the beer seemed to be all the same. And we went to different bars, and there was different things in there, different music, different kinds of things going on. And some bars were quite nice, some were rough and ready. And all the beer was the same. It was all in these bottles with marbles in the top. And you could get cheap. We was advised not to buy it. Cheap, you could get cheap whiskey and gin, but they said don't buy it. It's deadly stuff. So anyway, then we got back to the ship. Some were stoned out in their minds. They didn't know whether it was coming or going. Bloods and falling. Or some of the MPs were bringing back in jeeps because the Air Force and Army was still at Colombo in those days. Weren't they? Mainly Service Corps and the water. They were all water transport blokes. They were at Colombo. And the Air Force were at Colombo as well. So then when we got back, we set sail again in the night. Sometime in the night we set sail. And our next stop was, after Colombo, was... where did we go from Colombo? Singapore. Now you're talking. Singapore. We pulled into Singapore and it was morning. We'd been sailed through the night and it was morning when we got to Singapore. And we was anchored up in Singapore itself. And he said, right. They said, today you're on shore leave from... some are going ashore at 9 o'clock. And the rest of you are going ashore at 11 o'clock. Those that go ashore at 9 o'clock have got to be back here by 3 o'clock. Those that go ashore at 11 o'clock haven't got to be back here till 6 o'clock. So we was with the blokes. I was went ashore at 6 o'clock. No, 11 o'clock. We went ashore at 11 o'clock, so we got ourselves sorted. Got dressed, had plenty of time, had a nice breakfast. And one thing and another. And when we went to Singapore, now they said... it'd just been opened 3 weeks prior to getting to Singapore. No, tell a lie. Hadn't been opened. It was another time. So when we get to Singapore, we goes, a bloke said to me, make your way to the Raffles Club and have a look at this Raffles Club, they said. And on your way through, you're going through a certain part of Raffles Club you was allowed to go in. It was like a public bar. So we went in there. Didn't go much on it, and there's all these chaps, all the chaps there, you know. There were all the rubber planters and all those sort of wallers, the colonialists, you know. And they were all talking the same, they were all puffing on these damn cigars, sitting there like they owned the gap. Well, they did, didn't they? Really? Rubber planters, weren't they? And it was some club, that Raffles Club, wasn't it? Oh, it was a beautiful place. So then we found a bar. And we went in this bar and it was entirely different to Colombo. Oh yeah, it was really upmarket. And the one thing I noticed, walking through the streets, you don't see a moggy or a dog. And I wondered about that. So I was talking in the bar to this bloke behind the bar, who speaks bloody good English. He was a Singaporean, you know, Malaysian. And I said, I've noticed something here. I said, No cats, no dogs. He said they can have cats and dogs, but they mustn't be out in the street. You've got a cat and it has to be collared. The cats have to have a collar with a name and address on it, and the dog has to have one. And if you're caught, you're fined and the dog is put down. So I said, oh, why is that? He said, well, another thing is they eat them here, you know. I didn't know that. I said, what about the moggies and all? So he said, oh, yeah, the moggies as well. He said, that's a delicacy here. Dogs, certain breed of dogs, they eat, but they must never, ever let the dog out on its own. If they've got a dog, they are only allowed to walk dogs in parks, certain parks. It was strange to me, you know, and they have to be on a lead. So that's why you never see a dog or a cat in the street or nothing like that, you know what I mean? Saw plenty of the other cats, like, you know, walking about. But they were lovely dressed. Oh, the girls were lovely, smartly dressed, you know. The Susie Wong dresses, slits right up to it. And they were absolutely beautiful, you know. Anyway, we gets back to the ship.